rather than something more basic and more simple. And as I said yesterday, it's a whole big shear in and of itself. But very simply, the Baal Shem Tov was responding largely, either directly or indirectly, to Shabtai Tzvi and the false messianic movement that sprung up in its way. Frank and the others who led many Jews astray, the Baal Shem Tov was trying to provide with an authentic Jewish messianic movement. Therefore, he chose the Kabbalah, which is the not just the basis, but whenever you see people ready for Mashiach, Kabbalah springs up. And there's a very big messianic movement. The Rav Hamitz actually writes in the introduction to the Eitz Chaim. Can I open the windows? In the introduction to the Eitz Chaim, he writes that the reason Mashiach hasn't come is because not enough people are learning Kabbalah. Because people don't treat that learning seriously. And of course the Arizal, who was the main reviver of the Kabbalah, lived in Sfat at the time when Mashiach was coming imminently, when they re-established Smicha, when they were trying to set up this Sanhedrin, when they were trying to, based on all sorts of visions and dreams and prophecies, they thought Mashiach was coming imminently. We'll talk more about Shabtai Tzvi a little bit later. But now we're going to answer the real question, when will Mashiach come? Of course, the simple answer is that those who know don't say, and those who say don't know. But we're going to first look at this.
That means you don't know.
Or I'm not going to say. Or both. So the first thing to establish is that it's an absolute principle of Jewish belief to believe that the Mashiach is coming. Rambam says, source number one, the Rambam in his 13 principles of faith, the 13 principles of faith, this is actually as it's printed in the Siddur, but he really wrote the principles, the Rambam wrote it in his commentary on the Mishnah when he was in his 20s. He wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, which was the first line-by-line commentary on Mishnah. He wrote it in Arabic so that it would be accessible to the frontline arm. And when he came, he wrote three introductions in his thing. He wrote a general introduction to Mishnah. He wrote an introduction to Pirkei Avos called Shmona Prakim, which you were learning last month in the introduction to Musa class, those of you who weren't doing the Masa stuff. And he wrote an introduction to Chelek, which is either the last or the second to last chapter of Sanhedrin, depending on whether you're looking in the Mishnah or the Gemara and which printing edition. Chelek is the famous Mishnah, famous chapter, which begins with the Mishnah that has the words, Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek La'olam Haba. And that's why it's called Chelek, because that's almost the first word-ish. So over there, the Mishnah says, all Jews, we say this every Pirkei Avos, Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek La'olam Haba. Very nice, everyone knows Pirkei Avos and goes home thinking they're saved. We don't read the next part of the Mishnah, which says, Ve'elu hein she'ein lem chelek la'olam haba. And the Mishnah's main purpose is to show who's not going to get a place in the world to come. And the Gemara on that Mishnah goes through and lists all the people who aren't going to get a portion in the world to come. So Rambam wrote an introduction where he outlines basic principles of faith, the basic ideas and concepts, so that we can know who's going to, what do you have to do or believe or feel or, I don't know, think, in order to get a portion of the world to come. So the Rambam wrote it in his introduction to Chelek, and there's a lot of discussion about whether he really meant it or didn't mean it, and whether these are actually binding, or it's possibly binding, and comparisons between the Mishnah Torah when he writes who's not going to have a portion of the world to come, and all sorts of interesting stuff. We're not going to talk about that at all. Somebody, I don't think we know who, took these 13 principles, decided it was too long and too Arabic-ish, and so they shortened it into one-line pithy Hebrew statements, and then someone else decided to print them in the back of the Siddur, so we say them every day, and so they become part of mainstream. They're part of Judaism, everyone knows, because it's in the Siddur. Just like the Midah Sayyam. Anything's in the Siddur, everyone knows about. So it says, I believe with perfect faith, and then of course they made it into a pop song and sing it at football games and things like that, so now everybody knows it. I believe with perfect faith in the coming of the Mashiach, even though he may tarry, that means take a long time. Nevertheless, I wait every day for his coming. Yit mameha, right? Means he's like, maybe, will come, maybe, won't come. I wait every day for his coming. fine, very nice. And then people get excited and say, why do you have to wait every day since Mashiach can't come on Shabbos? So why are you waiting on Shabbos for Mashiach if he's going to come? And that was a lot of it. And then somebody else decided to turn these principles into a song of Yigdal, which is why if you sing the song of Yigdal, it never works. You've got to repeat at least one line because there's 13 lines and every kind of tune has at least pairs, if not quadruplets of things. This is what the Rambam actually wrote. What?
How do you really feel about music?
Ask Weasel Zappa. There's Rambam. And this is actually the Rambam writing these words, except he wrote them in Arabic. And this is the Hebrew translation, my English translation from his Hebrew translation. The 12th principle is the Messianic... The Messianic era, Yemata Mashiach, is what he's interested in. One must believe and know. I'm going to actually translate, look at the Hebrew. Hu lahamin ula'emet, to believe and to make it true. Shiyavo, that this time of Yemata Mashiach will come. V'layachshav shiyit acher, and a person shouldn't think that it will take a long time. Im yitmameya, if it does take a while, then chakela, wait for it. Don't try and work out when it's going to happen. Don't try and look in the psukim to figure it out. Don't try and fix the time for it. Chachamim Omrim, and the sages say in the Sanhedrin, Tipach Ruchan Shem Machshavei Kitzin. Their spirit should explode of those people who try and figure out when Mashiach is going to come. They try and calculate the ends. Rambam says, don't do it. Furthermore, not only do you have to believe he'll be a messianic year, but you have to believe that this Mashiach will be the greatest of all the kings who've ever been. All the prophets talked about him from Moshe Rabbeinu through to Malachi, who was the last prophet. Right. Somebody who's not sure about whether there really is going to be a Mashiach or not. Or they say, well, he'll get Mashiach soon, he can, but he's not going to be that great compared to other people who've been, or he won't be like, you know, Brad Pitt or something. He's Mashiach. Kafar b'Torah, this person has denied the Torah, whoever he may be. Shia'id by the Torah, b'firish b'parashas Bilam, because the Torah says explicitly in the parashas, in parashat Bilam, or Parsha the Ten Mitzvah and Parsha the Tzavim, explicitly Mashiach is going to come. So if anyone tells you Mashiach is not going to come, or even if anybody would say, even if somebody would say that there is going to be a Mashiach, and I believe Mashiach will be who's going to come, I just don't believe it's written about in the Torah. I don't believe that the Torah says it's going to be a Mashiach. I think it's a late invention of the rabbis, or I think that we know it from some other source. They're also out. Right? Included with this because Moshiach she'ein meitz Yisrael ein beit David or Mizrach Shlomo bilvad is to believe that only a descendant of King David, and only David in general, but only from Shlomo, his descendants, they are the ones who can be kings of Israel. The kol achalek on mishpacha azot kafar b'shem Hashem Yisbarach u'bidivrei Neviyah. And anyone who argues and tries to establish a different kingdom, a different king who is not of the family of David and Shlomo, has argued with God and died. Blah, blah, blah. Which is why the Hashmonaim were wiped out when they became kings. They were from Dar Kohanim and not from House David. Yes.
Do we have any idea who David and Shlomo's descendants are now?
Oh, lots of people tell you they are.
But I mean, is there a realistic way to know for sure?
Yes and no. There's no way of tracing anyone's lineage back to King David. And there's, as far as I know, there's no DNA test for it yet. But it is possible to trace a person's lineage back to people who are known to be descendants of David. For example, Rashi claimed he was a descendant of King David. The Maharal claimed he was a descendant of King David. So if you can trace yourself back to Maharal, which is not all that long ago, 400 years ago, if you can trace yourself back 400 years, then you could also claim to be a descendant of King David. How do we know the Maharal really was? I don't know. He said he was. So, no, we can't prove it. But when Mashiach comes, we'll know for sure.
How do we reconcile the first he says, even though he may tarry, and then it says, one must not think he will delay. But if he delays.
Right.
Like,
so you've got to believe he's coming today. So here's the answer to the Shir, the shortest Shir ever. When is Mashiach coming today? That end. Now we can go. But if you want more details, then, in case he doesn't come today, then you still got to believe he's going to come.
So why do we need to believe he's going to come today?
Because it says on the Torah. Every day. Chofetz Chaim used to have a special suit hanging on the back of his door, which he's going to wear to greet Mashiach. You've got to believe people, some people, some people write on their wedding invitations, their wedding will take place, such and such in Yerushalayim, rebuild, blah, 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 such a date. If Mashiach fails to come, we have a backup plan of New York on such and such a date in time. There's everything. You're supposed to believe and live your life as if Mashiach is coming every day. Yes, you take it as read. Definitely implied. It's a principle of faith. We're supposed to believe Mashiach is coming every day, but at the same time, we're not supposed to try and figure out when he's going to come, or how he's going to come, or who he's going to be, or what it's going to look like. I know they're contradictory, but there's a difference between belief and knowing it as a true fact, and rationalizing and trying to figure it out. And that's really what I'm going to talk about, the dangers of trying to figure out when Mashiach is going to come. So in fact, I'm cheating in the title of the Shir. It's not when Mashiach will come, because the answer is today. It's what happens if you try to figure out when Mashiach comes. What's the dangers of doing that? But we have many expressions in Halacha of the fact that Mashiach is going to come today. I just quoted one, the Gaon Erevin. If a person says, Hareini Nazir b'yom sheben David ba. Right? If a person says, I'm going to be a Nazir, from the day, or on the day, from the time the Mashiach comes. Because if he comes, then I'll be a Nazir from today, for 30 days. Right? And a Nazir, obviously, is not allowed to drink wine. So the halacha is, if a person says such a thing, this person is allowed to drink wine on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because Mashiach can't come on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But they're not allowed to drink wine any other day, because Mashiach can come every single day. Right, so they wake up in the morning, I've got a cup of wine, maybe Mashiach's going to come in a couple of hours, you can't drink today. You've got to, halakhically, you've got to believe Mashiach won't come. There's an opinion in the Gemara, we don't actually hold like this luckily, but there's an opinion in the Gemara that Kohanim are never allowed to drink wine, except on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because Kohanim, who are drunk, aren't allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Since the Beis HaMikdash could be built any moment, they've got to be ready to go. So therefore, they're not allowed to ever drink in case Mashiach comes to the Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be built today. Chadash, right? We're now just after Pesach. There's a prohibition of Chadash. You're not allowed to eat wheat, which was grown since last summer and last winter until after Pesach. Right? Fruit wheat, which was grown last year, as it were, before Pesach, can't be eaten until after Pesach. Halacha of Chadash. In fact, we say it can't be eaten until the 16th of Nisan, that's the halacha, but the Torah says it can't be eaten until you've brought the Omer sacrifice, which is brought first thing in the morning on second day of Pesach. Right? And we're counting from the Omer sacrifice to the wheat sacrifice of Shavuot. So the wheat halacha is today, based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who said that whole day of the 16th is asa to have, to eat the new fruit. You've got to wait till the night time, because maybe, even though if there's no Beis HaMikdash and there's no sacrifice, then first thing in the morning you can already eat the food. But since Mashiach may come any moment, maybe he'll show up, rebuild the temple, start offering the sacrifice, and you'll have eaten already in the morning, and he's going to come to in the afternoon, and you'll have eaten something you weren't allowed to eat. If you've got to work the whole day. Halacha ma'aseh, we don't. There's many other expressions of this, where we act and we believe, and we base our lives on the fact Mashiach is coming today. I love this. Rabbi Yeshua, one of the Tanaim, one of the rabbis of the Mishnah, asked Eliyahu HaNavi. He used to have a chavrusa with him. So he said to him one day, Eimas Ati Mashiach, when is Mashiach coming? Amar Lei Zil Shein in a D-Day. What are you asking me for? I'm only Eliyahu HaNavi. You ask Mashiach. I mean, I'm supposed to come first and warn everybody he's coming, but go ask him himself. Hey, Yasif. Well, hang on, says Rabbi Yeshua. When are you going to ask Mashiach? Where is he? Apischa de Karata. He's sitting at the gate, at the entrance of the city. And the city here means the city of Rome. Or my simile. Right? Oh, hang on. How, there's lots of people hanging out outside Rome, right? Oh, so all the poor and the people who can't afford to come into the city. The people. How do I know which one's Mashiach? Is Yasiv Beni Ani Sovle Chalayim. It could be the gates of Yerushalayim, but probably... I mean, he lived at the time of the destruction of the temple, so it's... In fact, just after the destruction of the temple, it's more likely that it was the gates of Rome or something. So how do I know which one's Mashiach? Yasiv Beni Ani Sovle Chalayim. Mashiach is sitting amongst all the poor people who are suffering from all sorts of diseases and skin problems or whatever. Bikulon Sharova Asiri Bachadzin, all the other guys there are taking off their bandages, comparing notes, and putting on their ointments, and putting all their bandages back on again. Right? The Ihu Shari Chad Asir Chad. But Mashiach just takes off one little band-aid, puts on the cream, puts that back on again, takes off the next one, puts the cream on, puts that on again. Right? Because Amma, Mashiach always says to himself, Dilman Mibaine, maybe I'm going to need to come right now. July Ikev. I don't want to have to wait another 5 minutes to put all my bandages back on. I want to be ready to go any second. So therefore, Mashiach is ready to come at any time. Fine. Aza legabe. So Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, off he goes to see Mashiach. Amrele. So Rabbi Yeshua finds Mashiach and he says to him, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi, Omari. Right? How you doing? Amrele. So Mashiach says back, Shalom Alecha, Bar Levi. How are you doing, son of Levi? Amalei, so Rabbi Yeshua says, La'emas atimar, when are you coming? I guess he wants to sell his long-term investments now if Mashiach's coming today. Amalei, hayom, I'm coming today. Fantastic. So he jumps back on his motorcycle, races back to Eliyahu Navi. Asked like Eliyahu, Amalei, my Amalach, Eliyahu says, no, what did he say to you? Amalei, Shalom Alecha bar Levi. He said to me, hello, son of Levi. Amalei, so Eliyahu says, you know what that means? Iftachalach la'avuch la'ami da'ati. If he said that to you, that guarantees that you and your father both have a place in the world to come. Because Mashiach wouldn't know your name if you weren't guaranteed a place in the world to come. Amalei, shakakri, but that's the reassure. I've got a problem. Mashiach lied to me. He told me he's coming today. Damari hayom atina, velayata, he hasn't come. Amalei, Eliyahu says, you misunderstood. Hachi amalach, this is what he said to you. Hayom im bekolot yishma'o. He said the first word of the pasuk. You're supposed to finish off the pasuk, which is today he's going to come if you listen to God's voice. If you, the Jewish people, do what you're supposed to do, Mashiach is going to be here in a second. That's the day he's coming. So, again, Mashiach is coming not only today, but momentarily. If we don't get to the end of this class, you have to send me the recording from Powerbox. However, even though we know he's coming today, we should never try and figure out when he's coming. The Gemara says, which the Rambam alluded to, in source number 5, Amr Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amr Yonason, Tipach Atzman, Shalmach Shalei Kitzin. I think the Rambam quoted it as Tipach Rucham, right? Okay, Tipach Atzman. Which probably is to the translation from the Arabic, rather than anything else. Tipach Rucham, says the Rambam. Or a different version of the Gemara. Means the same thing. Blasted be the bones, according to the Sincena translation. Shayu Omrim, because what's the danger in working out when Mashiach is going to come? Kevin Shayagiyah to Ketz Belay Bar, if they get to the date when he's going to come and he doesn't show up, Shur Enabar, they're going to say he's never coming. So it's a really bad thing, they'll give up on him completely. Elacha Kelo. Rather, you should wait for Mashiach. Shneimar im yitmameach hakelo. If he delays, tarries, wait for him. Shema tamar ani machakim v'u'enu machake. So maybe you're going to say, we're busy waiting for Mashiach, but he's sunk himself in the wine, he's not built for waiting. Tamar lama, l'chein yechake Hashem, l'chana l'chem. L'chein yirum l'rach machem. That God also is waiting to give us Mashiach, to give us the mercy and the grace that we begin machash, anu machakim v'hu machake, mi ma'akev. So if God's waiting, and we're waiting, everyone's ready to go, what's holding the process up? Midas hadin ma'akev, the Midas hadin, God's attributes of strict justice, says, not today, they didn't pass muster, they didn't do what they were supposed to do today. Begin machash, midas hadin ma'akev, anu lema machakim. So if Midas Adin says Mashiach can't come today, what are we waiting for? This Kate's question. Why are we bothering waiting if Mashiach's not going to come today? And this is the Kabel Schar. You get reward for waiting for Mashiach, even if he's not going to come today. The fact of waiting for Mashiach to come, even though it's not the right time, even though Midasim says, listen, God, you promised me another 17 years or whatever number it is, of how long it is, and the Jews aren't really, right? And we know the Jews aren't behaving themselves, and we don't. Does anyone ever read the Onion website? Mm-hmm. There was a piece today, yesterday, about God making a surprise visit to church. Sure enough.
God making what?
A surprise visit to church. That's quite interesting. There was a link from that to a previous article that they'd written about the Jewish people suing God for breach of contract. Anyway, so the truth is, though, God's counter-suing because we haven't kept our side of the contract either. And we know that, and we look around the world at what's going on, and we know that we don't deserve Mashiach to come today. If Mashiach's going to come and we deserve it, we don't deserve it. So why are we waiting for Mashiach if we know he's not going to come? Because the answer you get reward for waiting for Mashiach anyway. And what's not in this Gemara, but is also true, is that even if we don't deserve Mashiach, it also comes. Okay.
What, the blessed are all
they
that wait for him?
Yeah.
Where is that
written? I just forgot to put it in Hebrew, so I have no clue. But if you hand me a Gemara Sanhedrin, I can find it for you. It is on the shelf. The one shelf says Talmud, the second shelf down. It is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. It is. I mean, this whole, it's actually worth reading this whole page of Gemara. It is Yeshaya 30. I don't know which verse number. Isaiah, chapter 30. And the Gemara then goes on and says, when's he going to come? What are the signs he's going to come? How do you know he's going to come? What's going to happen?
Verse 30.
30, yes.
It's right here.
30. Same as the one above. It's the same, yeah, it's the same, continues to the same verse. Or same chapter. Rambam Paskins, this is Halacha and Mishnah Torah. Right? When he wrote his commentary on the Mishnah, he was younger, and it's not necessarily definitive in terms of Halacha. But Mishnah Torah, which he wrote in his 50s, he spent 20 years working on, and is definitive Halacha, says the Rambam, La'aylam lo yit'asek adam medivrei agadas, a person should never involve themselves in the agadatas, which are going to explain when Mashiach comes. When you're learning Sanhedrin, just read those pages quickly. 97 and on, just read them quickly and don't actually try and figure it out. And don't spend a lot of time on the midrashim that talk about this topic, kiyot and things like that. And don't make them the main topic of your study. The truth is, he's not only talking about agadas and Mashiach, put them in because of the Shia, but he's also talking about what is agadah? What's the purpose of agadah in the Gemara and the midrashim? It's not halakha, that's what's the point of agadah. I mean, it's nice bedtime stories for kids, but why is it there?
I thought it was like, I don't remember if this is right at all, but it was sort of like something that if you had a Masorah, then you could understand it. Like, it was sort of like...
Okay, what are you going to understand? What are you supposed to learn from it? What's the point of it? I'm not sure I agree with you, but we'll just leave that. But what's the point? What are you doing with the Gemara?
Trying to
gain
better understanding Hashem.
Okay. I'll say that point. Trying to get a better understanding of Hashem and the way Hashem works in the world, which is really giving us a better understanding of how we're supposed to behave, as we saw yesterday. So it's really what we call Hashkafa in modern terminology. The purpose of learning Agadata, or the reason there is Agadata in Midrashim, is to teach us Hashkafa, teach us the correct Jewish worldview, which then leads the correct way to believe. The Rambam says, don't spend so much time doing that, in general. Not only specifically about Mashiach, which is also true, don't spend much time doing it, but don't make that the main focus of your day, learning Hashkafa or whatever. Learn Halacha, learn what you're supposed to do. Don't try and figure God out too much. Right? It's a dangerous thing to do. And if you, the reason, one of the many reasons that the Talmud was burned, many times, but one of the famous burning in Paris was after a trial. They put the Talmud on trial, And the main, some of the main objections that the Christian prosecutors had to the Talmud were that it's heretical because it describes God in physical terms. And Christians say God is unknowable, indivisible, whatever it is. And in the Talmud it says that God puts on tefillin, and God sits, and God stands, and God talks, and all these kinds of things, which make God sound like he's got some kind of physical form. And therefore, the Talmud is heretical, atheistic. What's the right word is for that? And therefore, many of the Rishonim try and discourage people from learning too much Agarata, because those parts of the Gemara are dangerous vis-a-vis the Christians and the Muslims also. The Muslims, really, if the Christians thought it was not Jewish, then certainly not monotheistic, then certainly the Muslims thought that. But here the Rambam also is talking about Mashiach, right? Because, as you see, he says, don't calculate, don't try and figure out the end, don't try and figure out how things are going to work, what it's going to look like, how we're going to know. Don't worry about the details. This is after he's given you a whole description of what's going to happen when Mashiach comes, and how we're going to know he's Mashiach, and what person that's who should be recognized in Mashiach. But after he's explained to you what's going to happen, how it's going to work, he says, don't try and figure it out. Amru chachamim tipach daitan, is a new word over here. Tipach daitan shemakshvei kitin. Their minds should blow up if they try and work out when the end is. Ela yechakev v'yamin b'chlal adavah. You should just wait and believe that it's true, just in general terms, commercial ground like we explained, but don't try and figure out the details. Great. Excellent. All be nice. From people. Only problem with what the Rambam says and what the Gemara says and everything I've been saying is that the Gemara tells us when Mashiach is going to come. And we'll see it gets even worse than that on the next page. Another problem, which I'm not going to go into, but just is quite interesting, is in the same chapter of Chelek in the Gemara, there's an opinion of Rabbi Hillel, not Hillel and Shammai, but a different rabbi called Rabbi Hillel later, who says that Mashiach ain't coming, he's already been and gone. The Mashiach, the Yechizkiyahu, was Mashiach, and we had it, and it was very fantastic, and there's no more Mashiach. Who knows what he means by that and what's going on? That's not the halakha, and therefore we're not going to talk about that today, but it's just interesting. Now, the Rambam says, if you believe Mashiach's not going to come, you're a heretic, and yet someone in the Gemara says such an opinion. So, interesting. Okay. Says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Acha Arba Amas Lachor Ben Abayis, if it's after 400 years from the time of the destruction, you saw some 7, time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Im Yomar Lacha Adam Kach Stei Shavei Elef Dinarim B'dinar Echad, if somebody comes, I've got a great business proposition for you. My apartment block is worth $1,000, and I'm selling. Going to sell it for $1. You want to take it? Right? Lighty car. Don't buy it. It's a bad investment because Mashiach is going to come, and all the lands are going to go back to the tribes that they originally belonged to. So you're wasting your money. You're going to invest in property in Israel after Mashiach's coming 400 years after the temple, the destruction of the temple. So don't waste your money. Even if it sounds like a good deal, it's worth the time. The Masnisa Tana. Right. There's a brayso which says, "Acha alfas alafim u'masayim u'shleishim va'achas shana l'briyas ha'olam." 4,231 years after the creation of the world, right? Im yomar l'chad amkach l'chad sadeh shavu elef dinar b'dinar achad al tikach. The same thing. If someone offers you a really good deal in land, don't take it. My b'day, what's the difference if you're counting? In other words, the Gemara wants to know how many years after the creation of the world was the temple destroyed. Right, the answer is even I shlas shanim. There's an argument about over 3 years. So, I didn't do the numbers, but whichever one is, one day works out 3 years before the other. Certainly, by now we're well past that time. So if somebody offers you a really good deal, buy this piece of land, really, really cheap, they're trying to rip you off, really, because Mashiach's coming right now. Obviously, many people don't think like that, or act like that, or behave like that. But the Gemara is saying, Mashiach is going to come 400 years after the destruction of the temple. 403 years after the destruction of the temple. Same Gemara says, Tana de Be'eliyahu, and I think this is the main source for the whole business of 6,000 years, which everyone says Mashiach is coming at the end of 6,000 years, which again is equally awesome to say, because you know the word of Mashiach is coming. But if he comes at the end of 6,000, why? Because two reasons. One is if he's not coming to 6,000, to the year 6,000, then you're not going to wait for him to come today. And if we get to the year 6,000, he wouldn't come, then you give up shop. All the problems of working out the ends of five years, it was going to last for 6,000 years, the machine's going to come by then. That's equally awesome, in my opinion, says Hashem.
And why, I don't know, you're not responsible for whatever you might say, but all the time, if you, oh, it's going to come in 6,000 years, then we don't have to worry.
I think that's exactly what Gemara's saying, you're not allowed to.
So can I bring up this?
In my humble opinion. So the Gemara says it. That's my problem.
Right.
There's a contradiction over here. Right. The Gemara says don't try and figure it out, and then the Gemara goes and figures it out.
Okay.
So, I
would... How do you respond to someone who says that? Don't they also say that you could come early?
I know, but you don't really believe it anymore. Once you already said year 6,000, you don't believe it. But what's the year, if he's going to come before then, what's year 6,000 for? And if he's if you're sitting in the year 5999, and it's like the end of Elul, assuming the world's out of the Tishrei, right? The end of Elul, are you going to wait for him to come today, or are you going to wait another 3 days until year 6,000? And even then, I still think it'll be a very dangerous thing to say, even more dangerous close to the time. One day, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, and we'll see the dangers of that in a minute. But anyway, this, as far as I know, this is the main source for the fact that the world's going to last for 6,000 years. And in my opinion, it's clear that it's a garata, and it's teaching us some very important hashkafic message, but it's not giving us a halakha or a factual, not necessarily a factual description of the history of the world. Right. The world will be 6,000, will exist for 6,000 years. It's really convenient that God made the world in 6 days, and a day for God is 1,000 years, and it's going to last 6,000. It's just a coincidence. Shnei alafim tov, the first 2,000 years are going to be tov, meaning emptiness, nothingness. And if you do the math according to the chronology in the Chumash, that works out from the creation of Adam until the time when Avram Avinu is 52 years old. Avram was born in the year 1948 from creation. So 2,000 years finishes when he was 52, which is why, according to some opinions, that's when God discovered, when Avram discovered God, even though Rambam says that he discovered God when he was 3 and also when he was 48. But it must be 52 because that's when 2,000 years of Tohu was finished. And then that's going to be followed by Shnei Alafim Torah, 2,000 years of Torah, which, if you do the math, goes from the time of Avram Avinu until the codification of the Mishnah. More or less. More or less exactly, depending on what happens in the middle of the year when we're a little bit dodgy in our Jewish history. Yeah, 2,000 years goes from Avram Avinu discovering God when he's 52 years old until the codification of the Mishnah in the year 200 of the Common Era.
Right. 2,000 years of what?
Torah. 2,000 years from the discovery of God, or the rediscovery of God, and the worship of God, to the codification of the Mishnah, which is the summary of the oral law. It's not exact, because we don't know exactly which year the Mishnah was written down, and also because of the missing 150 years, which I'm not going to talk about. But in round numbers, it's pretty good, pretty close to go to... Now, let me look up Jewish year 4000, it'll be around the time the Mishnah was compiled.
240.
It looks like 240 in the Kohen, yeah?
If I did that,
good, okay. Fantastic. It makes sense, actually. That's probably absolutely correct. And then, so the problem is, though, in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah, they didn't count from the creation of the world. Except the previous source, it's like, what's the difference between the temple construction and the creation? We know when the world was created now, because we're much cleverer, but they weren't exactly sure. But anyway, okay. And then we're going to have Alpaim Shana Yimot Mashiach. 2,000 years. Mashiach's going to come after the year 240, and we're all going to sit and enjoy Mashiach for 2,000 years. And then, of course, the world's going to be destroyed for 1,000 years at the end of that. So right now we're living in the Messianic era. Fantastic. But because of our many sins, Mashiach hasn't come, and we're wasting our time when we should be enjoying Mashiach, and we're not getting Mashiach. But now's the time that Mashiach should come. Which, if you understand that, then it may well mean that if Mashiach only comes one day before the year 6,000, you only get one day of Mashiach, and then everything's finished. So it won't help. We should come today. That would be much better. So the Maharal tries to explain this. Maharal does explain this. Shnei alafim yimasa Mashiach. Pirush asman ha'achron hum yuchad yimasa Mashiach. The last time, when it was the world's created, it starts off as void, goes to Torah, which is the purpose of creation, and then you have 2,000 years of Mashiach finishing everything up. He has man achron who ashlama. Always the end of something is the completion. Shekola shehu v'achrona who ashlama. The last thing completes the whole picture. L'chein has man achron mityaches el melech Mashiach. Therefore, the last time in history is connected to Mashiach. Ki melech Mashiach yeh mashlim et kol, because Mashiach will complete the whole world. Kasher yeh kol olam chad, when all the world is unified. Al sheyeh olam b'shlemus, the world becomes complete. L'chach. Therefore, Mashiach, Gemara connects Mashiach to the end of time, the last 2,000 years, because that's the time of completion, and Mashiach will complete the world. One could understand from the Maharal that he's saying, don't understand this as a historical fact. He's telling you it's a midrash, a metaphor. 2,000 years, the last 2,000 years doesn't mean actually 2,000 years in time, but it means the Mashiach will bring perfection to the world. He's going to complete the world. It's going to be nothing, Torah, and then perfection. And so, one could not say that. Okay. And then the Gemara gives us other clues as to when Mashiach is going to come. Right? Source number 10. Kem Shenimnas Yerushalayim Bar David. When Yerushalayim is rebuilt, right, look around you, not bad. Mashiach is coming. Excellent. Shemar in Hoshea, Acha Yeshuvu Bnei Yisrael, Ubikshu as Hashem Elokeihem, Bet David Malkam. After the Jews have returned, they're going to seek God and their Messiah David. So Mashiach is going to come now because we'll come back to Israel and all, and Jerusalem is rebuilt. Fantastic. Of course.
Is considered rebuilt what we have now?
Well, apparently not, and she has not here. But it looks pretty rebuilt to me. I don't do construction across the road, but basically it looks... I should say something else instead. We have in the Amida, we say this every day, right? The reason the Amida is in the Amida in the order they're in, we first say Uvnei Yerushalayim, and then Es Temach David. And then... So first we have to rebuild Yerushalayim, and then Mashiach is going to come. Now, of course, if that's true, then what's the point in waiting? I mean, maybe today we'd say Yerushalayim is rebuilt, but 100 years ago, Yerushalayim was pretty not rebuilt. So what's going to wait for Mashiach to come if Yerushalayim has to be rebuilt first before Mashiach can come? So presumably we don't agree with this anyway. Either way, whether it's rebuilt or not rebuilt, Mashiach can still come. Except that the Gemara says it. Another thing, the Gemara Yuma says, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ein Ben David Bar, Mashiach cannot come, Adja Tishat Malchus Romi HaRishah B'Fal Al-Kula Tishat HaRishim, until Rome controls the world for 9 months. The problem is, the chance of Rome controlling the world right now are pretty slim. So
does that mean Arabs? Because there is something that says...
No, Arabs is the next page.
I mean, can I consider it like that Rome controlled the known world for more than 9 months?
Then the Sheikh should be here already.
But it doesn't say like that he will come right after that. It just says that he won't be able to come until that happens.
All right, fine.
Wait, is Rome considered like Islam? Because that's Christianity?
Maybe. People say that, but maybe it's America. Maybe Barack Obama is really the Messiah and he's going to run the world for 9 months. And... What did I say, maybe? Of course he is. Everyone knows that. Source number 12. Take that off the tape, by the way. Source number 12. Al Pnei Kol Echad Nafal. The pasuk says, talking about Yishmael, that he's going to overrun all his brothers, or fall before his brothers. Right? The Baal HaTorim says, that's the end of Parshas Va'era, and the beginning of Parshas Tolos, Eir Tolos Yitzchak. Lama, to teach you that Kshu Yipol Yishmael Ba'achri Sayamim, when Yishmael, which may or may not be the Arabs, when they collapse, Ba'achri Sayamim, the end of days, Az Yitzmach Ben David. Then Mashiach is going to come. Shumi told us Yitzchak was the descendant of Yitzchak. So all we have to do is pray for the collapse of the oil-based economy, and then Mashiach is going to be there. Or if you don't like these physical markers, then maybe we've got a spiritual marker when Mashiach is going to come. The Amar of Asi in Source 13. Ein ben David ba ad sheyechlu kol neshamot shebeguf. Mashiach can't come to all the souls in a place called Guf. Guf is a part of heaven where all the souls are kept until they're born. So until all the souls are used up, Mashiach can't come. Shneimar ki ruach milefanai ye'atov. That I will not fight forever. I don't know, this is really weird how this passage actually means this. But anyway, it's still true. That we've got to wait for all the souls to be born. That means if...
Obviously
that's what it means. That's probably why in Egypt they had so many kids all at once, because they're trying to get to the end of Mashiach really quickly, but then they left too quickly and didn't finish, so we didn't get Mashiach.
But isn't that not during the 2 years of Mashiach?
Isn't what?
Isn't that not during the 2 years of Mashiach? Trying to start 2,000 years?
Not during the 2,000 years of Mashiach.
When we
you mean, there were, oh, I said, oh, right, fine. But that was written afterwards.
They didn't know that before.
Right. Okay, so not only does the Gemara, and the Baal HaTorim, I cheated, but just I couldn't leave Shema out of the picture. Not only does the Gemara tell us what's when Mashiach is going to come, but the very same Rambam, check this out. Rambam says, don't try and figure it out. You're not allowed to figure it out. It's a really bad thing to figure it out, and you're going to explode in all sorts of horrible ways. Says the Rambam, he's writing a letter to the Jews of Teman, who were going through horrible persecutions at the time, on the verge of collapse and giving up their faith and everything else. Says the Rambam. We have an amazing and wonderful tradition in our family. I heard it from my father, he heard it from his father, he heard it from his father. This dates all the way back to the original exile from Yerushalayim. In my family, in the Maimonides family, we have a tradition, it wasn't called Maimonides, whatever, of the following. Right? Be'or HaDavar, he says what it is, and it means, Shebenevuas Bilam, in the prophecy of Bilam, which he mentioned in passing in Parakelech, that it's alluded to over there. If you look there, Yesh Remesh Shetafzer Nevuah Yisrael Achar Shetafzik Mehem, that there's a hint that prophecy will come back to Israel after there's no more prophets, at a time when there's no more prophets. Lefish Yesh B'Torah Psukim, that there are verses in the Torah, Sha'afal Pisha, Kavana Behem Lashon Inyan, even though talking about one thing, Afal Pikin Yesh Behem Remez Ni Yenacherz, alluding to something else, if you know how to read it properly. Which is what you were saying about tradition of what Midrashim mean, or Midrashim Rai, these Pesukim seem to be saying one thing, and they're really saying something else. Va'ale Inyan Azeh Kavano Shazeh Shama Bilam, so we have a tradition, that when Bilam said, Ke'et Yoma, those bread. Now Yaakov says, what does God do? Yesh Bosot, there's a secret. Shemin Ha'et Ha'i, Yesh Lachshov, Kaminyan Sheyesh Mishesh Yimei Bereshis Vad Ota Ha'es. That you've got to count the same number of years from creation to when Bilam said those words, and that amount of years forward, and that's the midway point of the world. K8 means like this time, amount of time, this is year, whatever it is. Double that amount of time. And then, the Tafsir on Nevuah Israel, that's when Nevuah is going to come back to Israel. And the Azim Alehma Nevi'im, Amar Balashim, then the Navi is going to say, what has God done? But the Fiya Heke Shazer, Apir Shazer, Tafsir on Nevuah Israel, Bishnat Parvat Alafim, Tshamot, Shiv'im, Vesheish Litzira. And therefore, we can do the math. And work out the Mashiach is going to come in the year 4976 after creation, which Hashem is going to tell us what year that was in Roman numerals.
Yeah, let's
say. Ve'ein safek she'chazarat ha'nevuah hi hakdamas Mashiach. And there's no doubt that when Nevuah comes, that's because Mashiach is about to come. So says Rambam, right? Same Rambam who says, don't try and figure it out. He gives you a precise year when Mashiach is going to come. Or at least when Nevuah is going to come, which is going to allow for Mashiach to come.
Do we know when this was written?
Yeah. It's something like 20-something years before the date that he's going to say it's going to, Mashiach's going to come. I don't know. Rambam...
Wait, I'm sorry. What did you say?
Rambam died in 1205? No. Born at least.
1216.
It's just after Rambam died that the date he's prophesying for, and he wrote this when he was in Egypt, so it was towards the end of his life. I think he died in 1205.
Did you figure it out?
She did.
What is it? 1216. Oh, that's what you... 1216.
See, I looked on Wikipedia, whatever, this number of the Jewish calendar comes up, the right number, but you're clever than me.
I could
It's something like, if you're wrong, you're very close. I think you're right. No, that's twice the distance. Bilam is the halfway mark of 1216. So Mashiach's going to come 1216.
But we're past 1216.
Oops. Rambam telling us when Mashiach is going to come, when he's busy, being busy telling us not to figure out when Mashiach is going to come.
So that they don't stop being Jewish.
Can't
it
just be telling?
When you say year, then they're going to be like, perhaps. People give these dates because they want to get people like, because people are just like, what's going on? And they're like, okay, I want to, like, art, like, what's it called? Like, Aaron. You're like, okay, let's just kind of keep it going. And then it's kind of like you're using stuff that's not yours. Like, you're making stuff up to cover yourself again. It's going to make you even worse afterwards. So what's the point of coming to that?
Maybe if persecution would die down in the 20 years, and then at least, like, it would be so...
Yeah, but we've been persecuted for how many years now? Like yeah, now this is only recorded with my
followers. Like, in this particular second, we can't compare what we're in right now to what they were
of course we can. Assimilation, right? People compare the assimilation.
You're letting me down. People are letting you down. You're not fighting.
But you're right, okay, so I agree 100%. So I was arguing with somebody about whether I should put that source in the sheet or not. Somebody said you can't give a source of that because it's he's contradicting himself and people won't understand how he can contradict himself and it doesn't make any sense and how can you do that? But I think you said exactly the right answer. But I think the Jews in Tema were in such dire straits that the Rambam felt that telling them when Mashiach was going to come is going to give them hope now, and the situation now is worse than they will be when they get to 12:16 and Mashiach doesn't come. And they're disappointed it didn't come.
Buying time.
But
he believed it.
I'm sure he believed it when he said it.
Right? Some degree.
And I'll say more than that. It could be that was the Mashiach was supposed to come. But we messed up yet again. Probably he's right. Probably Mashiach should have come in that year. Probably that was exactly the time for Mashiach to come. But I tried finding what happened in that year, see if there was anything that really cataclysmic that would have been. But probably Mashiach would have...
Magna Carta was really close to that.
The what? Magna Carta?
Was really close to
that. But that's not... I mean, I know England's the centre of the world, but that's not... I think that's the... I think that any time people say when Mashiach is going to come, it's only... or it should be understood as buying time. Like, don't give up. Mashiach's coming. You can't even imagine Mashiach. I mean, things are so bad and so dark, you can't even imagine Mashiach. So, you know he's going to come in a couple of years. Just hang in there. It doesn't... And he will come then. Of course that's true. But he's going to come today as well. It doesn't mean he's only going to come then. It doesn't mean he doesn't come in something wrong. It means that... And whenever persecutions are really, really tough, whenever things get really bad for the Jews, that's when Mashiach, or talk of Mashiach, comes along. That's, I mean, in the 20th century... Right, the messianic visions of a rebuilt Israel, even though they weren't at the time particularly Jewish or religious visions, but it was a messianic vision of a rebuilt Israel, and that grew out of the persecutions and anti-Jewish sentiment, starting with the Dreyfus trial leading up to the Holocaust, which allowed us, I'm not saying Israel came about because of the Holocaust, but I think that drive and desire for Mashiach came in the wake of that. The messianic drive at the time of the Shulchan Aruch and the Arizal in Sfat, I think, was in the aftermath of the expulsion from Spain. It was only a few years after that. In the massacres of Tach-Vatat, which is Shana.
What?
5,409 is what years in English, please? As a Hebrew name. Hebrew years? It's 1648, 1649. Bogdan Khmelnytsky was a Ukrainian Cossack fighter who led a revolt against the Polish ruling powers and is revered to this day in the Ukraine as a national hero. And if you look at the five, I don't know what the currency is called, but the five thing, you know, you've got a picture of Bogdan. Thank you, Rush. Bogdan Khmelnytsky, and there's statues of him in the town square and everything. And in Ukraine, he's a national hero. He also, while he was busy fighting the Poles, he still had time to massacre tens of thousands of Jews and wipe out entire Jewish communities across Europe. And part of the reason for the mourning, the reason Ashkenazim has stripped the mourning custom shoes here is almost because it was this time of year that Khmelnytsky was going around massacring people. Right, that was 1648. In 1655, Menashe ben Israel, Manasseh ben Israel, went, he was, I think he was born in Amsterdam or something like that, he went to London to argue his case before Cromwell to allow the Jews to come back into England. They'd been expelled, and Cromwell allowed the Jews to come back in 1655. They had a big meeting, which I've forgotten the name of, and they argued back and forth whether or not the Jews could come, and they didn't reach a conclusion. But then somebody noticed in the small print that actually there was no law saying they couldn't be here anyway. They just, like, they'd been kicked out. There's actually no law that said they couldn't come back, so just come back and don't ask any questions. Menashe ben Israel was playing very heavily in his argument for the Jews coming back on the fact that Mashiach was about to come. He talks about the fact that was well known and well believed by all the Christians at the time, that Mashiach was going to come in the Christian year 1666. There was a group in Britain called the Fifth Kingdom, I think it is. They said that the first four kingdoms mentioned in the vision of Nebuchadnezzar, the dream, we've got Babel and Paras Madai and the Greeks and the Romans, and the fifth kingdom is going to be English, obviously, because really they are the centre of the world. And that's going to take place in 1666. So Menashe ben Israel said, if you're going to have Mashiach, you've got to have some Jews as well to help it happen. So the whole world, the Jewish world was ready for Mashiach because the Christian world was ready for Mashiach. It's interesting, right? The prophecies or the allusions to Mashiach are found much more in the Zohar than in the Talmud. So when Pope Paul IV, for example, ordered the burning of the Talmud, he said, well, don't burn the Zohar, that's okay, we can leave that one alone. I couldn't find it when I checked, but I seem to remember that the Vatican actually sponsored the first printing of the Zohar. Right, there was a whole movement of Christian scholars learning Jewish Kabbalah trying to figure out when Mashiach was coming. Now, of course, for them it was the second time round, but it's the same thing. So there was a clear expectation of when Mashiach was going to come. Why am I saying all this? Because I want to point out the danger of calculating when Mashiach is going to come. If I walk in and say when Mashiach is going to come in the year 2020 or something, it's very dangerous, because what did happen in 1666? Shabtai Tzvi came and proclaimed himself as the Mashiach.
Oh, no.
Right, 1665, 66. In 1666 he went to the Sultan of Turkey and said that he was Mashiach, and most or a very large segment of the Jewish world believed that in fact he was Mashiach and were prepared to follow him. And even after he converted to become a Muslim, I think he died in 1668, 7, like that. And at the end of his life, he converted. It's a really interesting story. He sat in jail. He came to the Sultan of Turkey, proclaimed himself Mashiach. He said, part of the Messianic process, Turkey was the superpower at the time, right? That was the Edom or whatever, that was the America. And part of the thing is that the Sultan of Turkey is going to take off the crown from his head and put it on my head as a Mashiach, and he's going to get off his throne and then he sit down there. So Shabtai Tzvi goes off to the Sultan and says, hi, I'm here, ta-dam, and the Sultan threw him in jail. Okay. But somehow he seemed to, even though he was sitting in jail, he was holding court there. That it wasn't, maybe he's Mashiach, let's not be too harsh on him. So he had this whole court system set up in the prison where he was being held, and people used to come and make pilgrimages to him and visit him, and he had delegations from all sorts of people there in this jail in Turkey. People used to say, Jews around the world used to say a special Mishaberach for Mashiach, for Shabtai Tzvi. They printed Sidurim and Chumashim with a picture of Shabtai Tzvi in the front as the Mashiach, Melech HaMashiach. If they would have had buses, they would have put his picture on the side of buses, but they didn't get it yet. Big flags outside everyone's door saying Mashiach is here, Shabtai Tzvi. And that was because 1666 was when Mashiach was, not only because of that, but because of this expectation that Mashiach was going to come in 1666. Then Shabtai Tzvi, who did come at that time, happened to fit the bill and was Mashiach, even though he basically didn't do any of the requirements, any of the things that you would expect a Mashiach to do.
Was he from Zalmanandal? Maybe he thought he was going to be Mashiach.
He claimed he was. Like, not only that, he claimed he was, and not only that, he had a prophet, Nathan Azati. Nathan of Gaza was a prophet, and he known as a prophet, and he prophesied that Shabtai Tzvi was in fact the Mashiach. So, therefore, I guess he also said he was bent. I don't know how it works, but once you've got a prophet who says this guy's a Mashiach, then you're going to believe him. So many, many people believed him, were taken in. When he was when he was eventually, right, Sultan got a bit fed up after a while and told me that he either convert to Islam or opinion, and so he converted. So people kind of thought that's a bit odd. Although there were many other messianic movements who continued to follow Shabtai's feet after, even after he converted to Islam and even after he was killed. Frank.
I think he was killed eventually.
Frank started a movement pretty much straight afterwards where he said that Mashiach, he said he was Mashiach, obviously, he was Mashiach, and all the Jews should convert to Christianity. That's what God wants them to do. And there's a whole movement, Frankist movement in Europe. And there were other similar trends. So the Jews were basically just like physically, spiritually, emotionally wiped out after Shabtai Tzvi not being Mashiach and everything going horribly wrong, which led to absolute disasters in the Jewish world. And it was only when the Baal Shem Tov came along to try and fix, spiritually those things he was trying to fix, but psychologically he was trying to give hope to the people who were completely destroyed after Shabtai Tzvi by introducing them to Kabbalah and a popular movement, and everyone could be part of this. The reason that, well, one of the many reasons why people were taken in by Shabtai Tzvi was he was saying all sorts of Kabbalistic things. And there weren't very many people around who knew Kabbalah who were able to test whether what he was saying was true or not true. Because it's just like in Chumash, just like Gemara, just like anything else, you can learn the same piece of Zohar, the same piece of Gemara, does that mean this or does that mean something entirely different? And if you don't know, and the distinctions between something completely heretical and something that's actually true are very subtle. You can say the same sentence but the comma in a different place and it means an entirely different thing. So two things happened after Shabtai Tzvi. One is that the Baal Shem Tov started teaching people Kabbalah, and the other thing, almost at the same time, is that the Jews of Italy put a cherem, kicked the Ramchal out for teaching Kabbalah, and put a cherem on anyone learning Kabbalah until after the age of 40. So, on one hand, Kabbalah is dangerous, we don't want. On the other hand, if you don't know Kabbalah, you won't know what real Kabbalah is, and you won't know what false Kabbalah is, and you won't be able to work out whether Mashiach is real or is not real, and what's going on. Okay. So therefore, Mashiach is coming imminently, but don't try and figure out when he's coming. And having said that, it's a possible Shiosha. Number 15. I make you take an oath, daughters of Yerushalayim. Bitzvaot, ova'ayalot asadeh. With the deer and the gazelles and the hinds. Deer. Im ta'iru, if you awaken. Im ta'iru, or you like awaken again, stir up. Et ha'ava, the love, ad shetef pas. Until it is the right time, until it pleases. What does that mean? Says the Gemara Ketubot, Shir Hashem is a love poem which is referring to the relationship between God and the Jewish people. God is making the Jewish people, or there's a covenant between God and the Jewish people about these three things. Says the Gemara. Rabbi Yosef Ruchanina Amar Gimel Shavuot Halalu Lama. What are these three oaths that God makes you swear? That's one. By the deer and by the hinds. By the deer and by the hinds. Im ta'iru, im ta'oru, et ta'ava. The three things is to awaken, to stir, and love. What are those three things? Achad shlo yalu Yisrael b'chomer. One is that the Jews may not come back to Israel by force. They may not try and retake the city of Jerusalem. They may not try and fight for Yerushalayim. Whoops. The achad sheshpia kadosh baruch hu et Yisrael shlo yimroidu ba'umas ha'olam. In other words, the Jews are not allowed to rebel against the nations of the world. Luckily, the UN passed a resolution saying the Jews were about to come back to Israel. So, that was good. Another one that God made the non-Jews take an oath, because they're not allowed to persecute the Jews too much. Well, they didn't keep their side of the bargain after the Holocaust, so I guess we're allowed to break our side of the bargain as well. Which is why, right, this is the Gemara, this is the source for the Notori Carter, who say that it's forbidden to be in Israel, forbidden to do with the state of Israel, and ask us to come and live in Israel because we're breaking one of the oaths that God made us take if I get to live in Israel. But since we have permission to be here from the United Nations, I mean, the United Nations and the League of Nations preceded it, It's really only formed, as far as I can figure out, for two reasons. One of the reasons is to condemn Israel. That's basically what they do. If you look at the list of resolutions from the UN, there's far more resolutions condemning Israel than just about anything else they do. If you go by Ruba Kikul, the majority of what the UN is about, is the UN is designed to condemn Israel. That's one thing they did. The other thing they did was give legitimacy to the state of Israel in the first place, specifically so we can fulfill this Gemara in Ketubot. That how could you ever have the nations of the world giving permission to something? Only if you have a UN who votes, a majority vote, that the Jews can do something. So Rabbi Levi says, he says there's not three oaths, there's six oaths, because it says in the plural, Tzva'ot, so there's plural, and therefore each of those three is really two. So what are the six? So the first three is the same as above. Right? One is that the Jews aren't allowed to figure out when Mashiach is going to come, or not allowed to say when Mashiach is going to come. V'shaloi yirchaku etiket, they're not allowed to push off Mashiach coming, not allowed to do things to stop Mashiach from coming. Right? Or if you look at Rashi in source number 17, he had lo yitchaku etiket, with a dal to the resh, which means you can't try and make Mashiach come too soon. You can't have a Mashiach campaign. You can't pray or daven too hard for Mashiach to come. There's many, many stories about people who did all sorts of Kabbalistic things to force Mashiach to come, and it went horribly wrong at the end. So you're not allowed to either push away or give them closer. And you're not allowed to tell the secret to the non-Jews, and what their secret is different opinions in the Rishonim, which I'm not going to go into. So that God, when God exiled us from Israel, when God destroyed the temple, he made us as a nation take an oath that we weren't going to try and figure out when Mashiach is coming, or at least if we did figure out, we weren't going to tell anybody, and that we weren't going to try and make him come sooner or try and make him come later. So back to what the Rambam says, what we're supposed to do is just to sit and believe he's coming every day. If you don't believe he's coming every day, you've got to see this Mishnah in Sota, which is clear that he's coming imminently. And it's unbelievable he's not here already. The Mishnah, the last Mishnah in Sota, says that Ikvusid Mashiach, in the footsteps of Mashiach, in the time leading up to Mashiach, this is how you'll know Mashiach is about to come. What's going to happen? Chutzpi Yazke, that everyone's going to be chutzpidik. The Yoker Yamir, and no one's going to give any value or honor to people. Everything's going to be topsy-turvy. People who should be getting honor are not going to be getting it. Hagefen Tin Puria Vayan Biyoker, even though there's a lot of food being produced, it's going to be really expensive. Usually when you've got a lot of food, prices go down. But the world economy is going to go haywire. Or Malchus Teafet Laminus, and the ruling kingdom is going to become heretical. That may refer to America, or may refer to Israel, and may refer to the non-Jewish kingdom, or may refer to the Jewish kingdom. Ein tochacha, and no one's going to either give or listen to people telling you that they're not behaving properly. Everyone knows better than everybody else. Beis vad yelisnus, the Knesset is going to turn into a whorehouse. V'agalil yecharev, the Galil will be destroyed. V'agavlan, which probably is the Golan, Yashum is going to be laid waste. Anshei Gvul yisavvu me'ir le'ir, v'lo yechananu. The people from the border, from Gaza, from Gush Katif, are going to go around from city to city because they've been kicked out of their homes, and no one's going to have any mercy on them or care about them. V'chachmus sofrim tisrach, the wisdom of the rabbis is going to go rotten. You can't trust what it says in your Tev Ne'amah. Anyone who actually fears God, not just from Kai, but actually cares about God, is not worth anything. That you won't be able to find truth anywhere. Now, the kids are going to make fun of the older people, embarrass them. Old people will stand up for young people because they can't understand how to work the internet or the computers. They're going to have to stand up and give honor to the young people who are now running the world instead of the old people who were running it. Ben Minavel Av. A son's going to just make fun of his father, mock his father, like, disgusting. But kama ba'ima, a daughter's going to rise up against her mother. Kala b'chamotah, a daughter-in-law is going to have a go at her mother-in-law. Oive ish anshe beisai, the real enemies are going to be inside your own house. Divorce rates are going up. Pnei hador kipnei hakelev, the face of the generation is going to be like the face of a dog who's got no shame and just barks and makes a heck of a lot of noise, but ain't nothing there. Haben einem Beispiel mit Aviv, and a son's not going to be embarrassed in front of his father. He'll say, so what? It's fine. Val ma yesh alisha en, so what can we rely on? Al Avinu Shebishamayim, on our Father in heaven. The end.